From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Many veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan are taking advantage of the GI Bill to go to college. But veteran graduation rates at the University of Iowa are 15% lower than rates for non-veterans. On this Veterans Day, we'll talk about a new class aimed at helping veterans stay in school. My guest this hour, Army veteran Patrick Murphy, president of Iowa State University's Student Veteran Association. Also, neuropsychologist Dr. Michael Hall and doctoral student Tamara Woods of the Iowa City Veterans Association Medical Center. We get started right after this news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Many veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan are taking advantage of the GI Bill to go to college. There are an estimated 385 student veterans currently enrolled at the University of Iowa. That's up from 300 the previous fall. However, the University of Iowa graduation rate for veterans is 15 to 23% lower than the rate for non-veterans. And on this Veterans Day, we want to talk about the problems returning veterans can face when going to college. Also, a new course aimed at helping veterans stay in school. Life After War builds on the camaraderie and teamwork learned in the military to help student veterans to overcome PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and other barriers to graduation. Joining me for the entire hour, my guests, Dr. Michael Hall, a neuropsychologist at the Iowa City Veterans Administration Medical Center, adjunct assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the Carver College of Medicine at the University of Iowa, as well as an adjunct in the University of Iowa's College of Education's Counseling Psychology Program. Welcome to you, Dr. Hall.
Thank you.
And also joining us, a doctoral student at the University of Iowa's Education's Counseling Psychology Program, Tamara Woods. Good afternoon. Welcome to you.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Joining us by phone, Army veteran and the president of the Iowa State University Student Veteran Association, Patrick Murphy. Happy Veterans Day to you, Patrick.
Well, thank you, sir.
And you have 9 years of active duty in the U.S. Army behind you and 11 years in the Iowa National Guard, I understand. You served 10 months in Iraq in 2004, married with two kids and living in Boone, where we're talking to you today.
That is correct.
Let me start off by asking you about the challenges, the biggest challenges you've faced for transitioning from life in the military to life as a student.
I'd have to say my biggest challenge personally has been mainly financial.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that's due to the fact that my last 11 years as part of the Iowa Guard, I was full-time National Guard. So essentially I was in the Army, but I stayed here in Iowa. And I receive all the benefits and everything that an active duty soldier who retires is. So I've got my retirement income from the military, and I've got my TRICARE medical coverage that regular Army retiree would have. So that made things a little bit easier. But the price of college nowadays is such that if you've got a family, you need a dual-income household for one of them to go to college full-time.
How much is of a difference is the new GI Bill making to you?
In the... Right now, I'm not collecting the new GI Bill. I'm still using my Chapter 30, which was my GI Bill that I earned prior to my deployment. And that will have... I run out at the end of this semester, and I've got one more semester to go, so I will be using the new GI Bill, Chapter 33 GI Bill, this spring.
Mm-hmm.
So,
let's put the financial challenges aside and ask if you've had any other challenges, more in the nature of because of your experiences during your deployment that may have affected your transition to school and the student life.
The main difficulty I'd say is generally. The faculty and administration part of the university doesn't exactly know how to translate my military experience and training into equivalent college curriculum. So I may have experience that could be considered equivalent to a few college courses, but without their ability to translate and recognize that the experience is the same as the education, I end up spending more time in college being taught stuff that I have already learned.
You were deployed in Iraq in 2003 and 2004. Can you tell us a little bit about your deployment?
Well, I was one of the lucky ones, or should I say I consider myself a lucky one. I was a supply sergeant, which meant when we got on the ground in our final location at Al Asad Air Base, which was a former Iraqi Air Force base, I spent most of the time actually within the confinements of the base, so I didn't have to worry about running convoys or going out on patrol or, as we call it, door kicking, doing the search function. So I was never actually in direct conflict with the enemy.
You didn't lose any in your unit?
Oh, yeah. We lost two people.
You did.
And that did affect me somewhat because I was the one that did the inventory of their stuff to get it all together to send it back, but nothing real major.
Have you struggled with any of the combat-related issues we hear so much about in the news?
Not that I've noticed. There's a possibility that my reactions are different from what some people would consider normal, but in my opinion, no, I'm not having any of the problems that so many of our troops have.
Patrick Murphy is a veteran of the Iraq War, president of the Iowa State University Student Veteran Association. We want to reach out to student veterans listening right now. How have you dealt with transitioning to life as a student? If you're a new student, tell us about it. And if you're an older veteran, what was the transition like for you? What advice could you offer a new generation of student veterans? 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Let me turn now to Dr. Michael Hall, a neuropsychologist at the Iowa City Veterans Administration Medical Center. What are some of the academic difficulties student veterans are facing in the beginning or returning to post-secondary educational settings? The biggest challenges we see, Patrick seems to be facing financial challenges and with the administration and so forth. Tell us about some of the other problems that veterans face going back to college.
Sure. First of all, I'd like to take the time to just express my appreciation for both Patrick's service and all veteran service. That includes both wartime veterans and peacetime veterans as well. A number of people that I work with served during peacetime and made huge sacrifices and suffered injuries during their service, which have continued to impact their lives significantly moving forward. The issues with veterans returning to school really became prominent for me when I switched from the Columbus, Ohio VA and coming here to Iowa. That was in 2007. And I started to see a pattern of veterans who were returning, some of whom had had prior experience in college and were going back to school and were having significant problems that they weren't having before. Other veterans had maybe entered school right after – entered the military right after high school and had essentially served their time and were now entering school and were having significant problems. And as we started to take a look at what was going on, there were multiple factors that seemed to be affecting performance, critical ones such as post-traumatic stress disorder, and more specifically if some of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder that really seemed to get in the way of functioning. One is hypervigilance, being aware and being on guard all of the time, attention and concentration problems, difficulty mm-hmm. with memory.
Mm-hmm. So give me an example of what you heard, an experience of a symptom that would exhibit
sure.
itself in a classroom setting that would be directly related to combat experience.
Absolutely. One that really stands out is a veteran who described having to sit in one particular seat that was close to the door, away from the windows, and allowed the person to have essentially a view of the room to feel safe. And if that seat was taken, the person didn't go to class that day. It was that significant for him and could not really focus if he was in any other seat. He struggled in any way, even if he got that seat, but mm-hmm. You know, it sort of speaks to the power of these issues. And other issues are not feeling like the people are not feeling like they're fitting in. There's a non-traditional status. People having these incredible experiences of going to combat and then going into classes with 18, 19-year-olds and not feeling that they relate, not feeling like they fit in, and how can they sort of bridge that gap.
Tamara Woods, I want to talk in a moment about the course that you've created and instruct, but I want to turn to Patrick Murphy quickly and ask you, Patrick. Now, you're president of the ISU Student Veteran Association. What stories have you heard from veterans at Iowa State University that may match up with what Dr. Hall is describing?
Well, our Student Veterans Association at ISU is a fairly small group right now. Most of our communication is done through Facebook or through our email address that we got with the club. So we don't really have all that much face-to-face interaction to talk war stories or anything about direct school activities. When we get together for our social visits and stuff, we're usually comparing stories of what happened when we were on duty and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There have been couple instances where a soldier or a veteran has complained that the professor or teaching assistant or whoever's in charge isn't able to understand the viewpoint that a veteran brings to a classroom, and occasionally treats that viewpoint as inconsequential. So it's a lot of miscommunication where the two sides of the conversation are not talking to each other at the same level. They've each got perceptions that are different, so there is a fundamental lack of communication.
Dr. Hall, you wanted to pick up on that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I have heard the same thing from multiple different people, and the outcomes can be negative as far as the person feeling like they have to challenge the professor or else just holding it in and then, you know, not wanting to go back to that class. We mentioned earlier post-traumatic stress disorder, and certainly post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury have been termed the signature wounds of this war. One of my experiences, particularly working in the polytrauma clinic at the Iowa City VA, which is our traumatic brain injury clinic, is that the majority of people who are coming in for services are not coming in for one problem. They're coming in for multiple issues. There's multiple mild traumatic brain injury exposures, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, difficulties reintegrating back into family, reintegrating back into school settings. And the problem that develops is it's not an additive effect. It seems to be more of a multiplicative effect. And then you throw in issues of pain, headaches. The number one problem people are coming back with are musculoskeletal issues, which makes sense given the amount of weight people are carrying around, those sorts of things, and plus the effects of IED explosions. Yeah. So it's really a very complex presentation that we're seeing, and you know, I very much appreciate you taking the time to focus on this, because I think it takes more than the VA, it takes more than the university. It really takes people working together to try to come up with solutions to deal with this.
Patrick Murphy, did you want to jump in there too before we move on?
What I was going to say is the musculoskeletal problems he's talking about, those are not directly or not necessarily directly related to their combat experience. It's just quite often lifestyle in the military. Sometimes your job is carrying 80, 100-pound packs a good part of the day, but other times supply clerks or admin clerks, they have, shall we say, piss-poor equipment that they've got to work with, such as desks and chairs, and you end up with carpal tunnel syndromes, tendonitis, lower back pain, upper back pain, headaches from poor posture forced on you by your working conditions. And a lot of that, it's something that's so they're so used to it that they don't even realize that that's a source of pain or the problem that they may be experiencing. So we got to make sure that we don't concentrate strictly on the more high-profile, visible injuries and problems such as PTSD and TBI.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us on this Veterans Day, we're talking about the challenges of veterans going to college. And Patrick Murphy, you've just been listening to, Army veteran, president of Iowa State University's Student Veteran Association. Also, Dr. Michael Hall of the Iowa City Veterans Administration Medical Center. I want to turn now to Tamara Woods, also in the Iowa Public Radio Iowa City studio, a doctoral student at the University of Iowa's College of Education's Counseling Psychology Program, also a psychotherapy practicum student at the Medical Center in Iowa City, the VA Medical Center, and an instructor of a new course called Life After War, Post-Deployment Issues. Tamara Woods, what prompted the creation of this class? And I know Dr. Hall advises you in this capacity as well.
Yes, that's actually how it came about. I was completing my rotation at the VA in 2007 with Dr. Hall. He was supervising my clinical work at that time. And we were both seeing a lot of our veterans coming back really struggling with school. So either dropping out of school, failing out of school, or for just some reason or another not going back. So really concerning at the time, and started brainstorming and thinking about why that might be. And this was a problem that was being noted by others in the country at that time as well. So we started doing some research and found that a lot of these combat-related issues, we call them post-deployment issues in the class, were hindering academic success at that time. So whether it was PTSD, brain injury, experiences of depression, anxiety, or newly acquired cognitive difficulties, such as problems with concentration and attention, were really creating difficulty for veterans in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Was the data there when a vet would leave a program after 2 or 4 or 6 years? Was the data there as to the reason why that person left, or was that, I can imagine that might have been a gray area or an area that was just not filled in?
Making it all the more frustrating, yes, definitely. Just unexplained reasons, either there was just lack of follow-through or just wasn't getting through in the class, grades weren't there for some reason or another, and there was no data there to explain why that was happening.
Mm-hmm. So come up with this class, Life After War. How did you design the course together with Dr. Hall to focus on the camaraderie that exists between veterans and the teamwork that you may find in a military setting that not necessarily found in a college or a university?
So how we came up with the design for the class?
Yes. How did you attack the problem once you identified it?
So we really did our research and looked at some of the programs that were out there already, and there are some wonderful programs out there that address various issues. There are programs that have veterans and veteran-only classes, or programs that address stigma within the military and returning to college, but none of them were really comprehensive. So we really drew upon various programs to make what we thought was an all-encompassing program. And from that point, just did our research as far as things that aid in academic success. So teaching those academic study skills, if we can have students come back, it may be 3, 4, 5 years since they were last in school, we can teach them those note-taking, paper writing skills that they may have missed or just need a refresher on. That can really increase their sense of self-efficacy in the academic setting, which is shown to increase persistence and motivation in school.
I want to reach out to our listeners, if, especially if you're a new student veteran. How have you dealt with transitioning to life as a student? Tell us about the challenges you've faced. Also, if you're an older veteran, what was that transition like for you years ago? What advice can you offer a new generation of student veterans? 1-866-780-9100. The exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. And we're also on Twitter at IPRTalk. Can you give me an example of somehow working into the classroom something that to a military veteran would feel more familiar, to build that in, camaraderie, teamwork? Specifically, what happens in the classroom differently?
I think the first thing is just having the experience of being in the classroom with other veterans. They come in with their own language, their own acronyms, and I've been told that they just kind of instantly feel safe, and there's that instant bonding that takes place, whether it's because they were in similar branches of the military or just being together in that room. The other thing we do is we utilize group activities, so group projects that we work on. One of the things we're doing this semester is looking at the way that post-deployment issues are portrayed in the media, and we're having them pair off to work together in a team to do this presentation and address some of the stigma surrounding mental health issues that's out there.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Murphy, I want to ask you maybe a silly question, but it's one that I have is, how do veterans, when Tamara says you feel at ease when there's another veteran in the classroom, how readily do you recognize other veterans in the classroom, and on what basis?
Well, sometimes it's just the way a person carries themselves. You think, He's been in the force or in the service, and other times there's nothing recognizable. It's just a feeling, but quite often I've had a couple of the younger members of my Student Veterans Association let me know that when they know that there's another vet in the room, they feel a little bit solidary, feel like they don't have to necessarily or figuratively sit with their back to the wall. They've got somebody there that's watching their back, and they keep an eye on the other people they know as vets, so they feel like they're taking care of somebody and somebody's taking care of them.
Mm-hmm. Veterans who are students, join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, as we discuss the challenges of going to college after you've served our country in a military capacity, 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We first go to Bill in Mount Vernon. Good afternoon, Bill. Are you a vet?
You bet.
Well, happy Veterans Day to you, sir.
Thank you very much. I went through 2 8-week sessions of group counseling for PTSD, and just listening to your program, I realized that that allowed me to go back to school. I would not have been able to do that otherwise, and I got to tell you, it's funny, my first experience in the classroom with a lot of 18, 19, 20-year-olds was I always got a seat by the door, I always checked the exits, I always checked if the windows would break out easily in case I had to escape. And after 2 or 3 weeks, all of that went away.
Hmm. What made it go away, Bill?
Well, daily exposure to the environment and the counseling I received with my buddies at the vet center.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I got my support.
And I understand you were a veteran of the Vietnam War.
That's correct.
What was the key to that counseling? Can you point to an exercise or an insight that you were given in that counseling that eased your mind?
Well, the thing about the overvigilance, which was, you know, throughout this group that I was involved in, and by the way, the groups that I participated in were of every branch of service, every race you could think of, and male and female. And all of these issues were talked about in depth. Counseling was supposed to last 2 hours every night. Usually they lasted 4 or 5 hours, and they were twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say exposure to the environment on a daily basis and the feedback I got from the counselors and the other vets or what made it possible. And I'm proud to say I graduated with a 4.0.
Bill, congratulations. We have to take a short break here. But, Bill, thank you for sharing your story. I'm sure it will help others who may be facing some of the same struggles. Bill from Mount Vernon, once again, thank you for your service. And happy Veterans Day, Bill.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to return in just a few minutes as we talk on this Veterans Day about the challenges facing veterans going to college. Also, a new class aimed at helping veterans stay in school. It's called Life After War. We'll talk about that further when we come back. Are you a veteran who is now a student? How have you dealt with the transition to life as a student? Perhaps you're like Bill. That transition to being a student was several years ago. Tell us what it was like for you. 1-866-780-9100. The exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Great to have you with us on this Veterans Day for The Exchange. Tomorrow on this program, we meet Hector Avalos, a former child evangelist preacher, now a professor who teaches biblical studies at Iowa State University. And here's the twist. He's the founder of the Atheist and Agnostic Society on campus. Then we talk with New York Times bestselling author Sam Harris about his new book, The Moral Landscape, in which he sets out to tear down the wall between scientific facts and human values. Tomorrow on this program. Today, we're exploring veterans issues, specifically veterans going into college classrooms. It turns out that they're graduation rate is significantly lower than non-veterans at the University of Iowa, where there are 385 student veterans. Currently, the graduation rate is 15% to 23% lower than the rate for non-veterans. Joining us in our discussion this hour, Dr. Michael Hall of the Iowa City Veterans Administration Medical Center, Tamara Woods, a doctoral student who is working with Dr. Hall, also Patrick Murphy, an Army veteran, president of Iowa State University's Student Veteran Association. We want to reach out to veterans this hour who are students and ask about your experience transitioning from the battlefield to the classroom. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org, on Twitter at IPR Talk. And our discussion continues with Sean in Des Moines. Sean, good afternoon. Are you a veteran?
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you, sir, for your service, sacrifice to the country, and happy Veterans Day.
Thank you.
What's your story?
Well, I lost my legs in the first Gulf War, and I was in the Marine Corps. I went on the Walter Reed Medical Center for treatment. Well, after I got released from the medical discharge, I had to go back to school so I could learn to do something, you know, other than what I could do before. And going back to school, some of my difficulties I had was the fact that people didn't understand. You know, and I didn't like people talking about me. I was just concerned about all that. You know, I just didn't feel comfortable going to classroom. I remember you saying a little bit ago, a guy was sitting in the corner, was thinking, look over the whole classroom. I thought to myself, you know, I could relate to that because I want to know who was coming, who was going. And the day that I got hurt, we were on a night patrol and our Humvees, and we come under an RPG attack, and we lost 14 guys in our unit. 21 of us were hurt. And it was an engagement that lasted, seemed like a long time, but in reality, it was just a few minutes. And so in just that few minutes, so many lives have changed, and everyone's got a story. Mine was, okay, I've got two daughters at home, and I thought I was going to die in Iraq. And I'm, you know, I'm a long ways from home, and literally my legs were blown off. I could look down and see my legs were not attached. So you look, you ask yourself, what now? What do I do? And doing nothing wasn't an option. So you have to go on to figure out what it is you can do, overcome any obstacles that get in your way, and then you step forward and say, okay, this is what I need to do. But to get to that point, you got to, you know, I think in an education matter, you have to bottom out. It's kind of like maybe an alcoholic, before he can get better, he's got to find a, be in the bottom and want to help himself. Well, that's where I was at. I had to find the will and then me to help myself so I could help other people. And those other people immediately are my two daughters, you know. And it wasn't so much about what other people thought of me with no legs. That bothered me at first, but, you know, school was hard.
Yeah, Sean, can you tell me when you returned to the classroom, your physical injuries apparent, what can you give me a specific instance that made it difficult?
Just the staring, the people wanting to ask you what happened, and I wasn't ready to talk about what happened back then.
How did you learn to deal with the staring and the questions that weren't being asked?
Through other vets, counseling, learning how to come to grips with myself and what I was dealing with and how other vets, people in the same situations, how they were dealing with it, feeding off each other.
We had talked about some of the psychological issues here. Did you face those as well, returning to the classroom, hypervigilance, for example?
Yeah, I did to a point. I was diagnosed with PTSD. Really just knowing your surroundings at all times. Because, you know, when you're in a situation like I was there for 3 years, you come home and, you know, you're not used to people not carrying guns or looking for explosives or just walking out and in a daze like people do when they're not in that situation. Over there, you're not walking around in a daze or paying attention to every little detail because you want to go home.
Sean, really, thank you so much for sharing your story with our listeners on The Exchange. Sean from Des Moines. And again, happy Veterans Day. Thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you.
And I want to turn to Dr. Hall now. When we have men and women go into combat, you are a neuropsychologist. What happens to the brain? How does that brain get shaped or reshaped by combat?
Absolutely. So there's research that clearly indicates that there are changes in key structures of the brain. They typically are deep brain structures that are protective, areas called the amygdala, the hippocampus. And what happens is that they essentially serve a good purpose in the combat theater of keeping people hyper aware of what's going on. I think Sean mentioned that and did so eloquently. The problem is that those changes that occur both within how structures of the brain are change and then the neurochemistry of the brain changes and then the behavioral consequences of that. What happens is that when people return back to civilian life, there's still those problems that are going on or those changes that are going on, and the brain isn't essentially rebooting back to, say, civilian life. So that's where we see the hypervigilance persist, the exaggerated startle response. If a noise goes off, there's an exaggerated response. So those are the things that we see really get in the way oftentimes of people achieving both doing a good job in school and vocationally. And this brings up a critical point of stigma that I really see these as natural consequences of being in combat situations. There's civilian comparisons of rape victims, assault victims, motor vehicle accident victims, and the same things occurring. But really with the veterans being in this environment for such a prolonged period of time, these changes in the brain become difficult to deal with and difficult to change. So mm-hmm. we do have psychotherapies and medications that do help with that. And that was a part of the real genesis of this course and is a large part of what the course addresses.
So, Tamara, in the course of the course, simply raising awareness about the biological changes in the brain, is help in itself?
Yes. So psychoeducation surrounding just kind of the incidents and characteristics of a lot of these natural consequences of combat has been shown to reduce symptoms and be a predictor of positive recovery. We're also hoping that by increasing understanding of these post-deployment issues in the students, it will also serve to reduce stigma around these issues, showing mm-hmm. that they're very natural consequences and have very real biological underpinnings.
And you are the instructor for this course?
I am the instructor, yes.
So have you had sort of what we'll call an aha experience on mm-hmm. the face of a vet in front of you? As you explain brain chemistry, you see a light go on and that person's face, or perhaps they verbalize it and say what?
The one I get that I've had a couple times is, wow, it's a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. One of the things I did early on in the semester, when they walked in, I said, why did you sit where you're sitting today? And right away, everyone was acutely aware that they kind of came in and cleared the room, as they said. They said, I'm sitting here, back against the wall. I can see the door. I know there are windows behind me, but that's okay. I'd much rather face the door. So even in that situation, they're trying to learn. They're trying to concentrate, take notes, listen to what I'm saying, integrate that information. But the entire time, they're very acutely aware of where they are in that room, and that can create a lot of problems.
And I understand it was some of your students that came up with a name for the class, Life After War.
It was originally Biological Psychology and Post-Deployment Issues, and I got told that's a bit of a drag. So
that's a problem of two psychologists yeah. trying to come up with a name.
I thought it sounded exciting.
So how do we gauge – you outlined some of the goals in this mm-hmm. Course. How do you gauge whether you reach those goals?
That's part of what we're trying to do. While I said earlier there were programs out there that were doing things to help veterans reintegrate back into civilian life, none of them have really been studied. And that's part of what we're doing here is to make sure what we're doing is helping the veterans. So we're going to be doing some research around that to make sure what we're doing is meeting the goals of decreasing stigma, maybe decreasing some of those symptoms of hyperarousal in the classroom setting. Also increasing academic self-efficacy and feelings that the students can achieve and successfully navigate the academic arena.
If you just joined us, we're talking about the challenges veterans face going to college. Also a new course, Life After War, building on the camaraderie and teamwork learned in the military to help student veterans overcome such issues as PTSD, traumatic brain injury, other barriers to graduation. Michael Hall, we wanted to reach out to our listeners, especially veterans who are students, 1-866-780-9100. Tell us about your transition, what barriers you faced, 1-866-780-9100. theexchange at iowapublicradio.org. Dr. Hall? You wanted to, I thought you had a further comment.
I did have sort of a follow-up for that. And one of the critical things is we do want to assess the efficacy of this course and hopefully then disseminate it across the country, because what we've had to do is we've borrowed from other programs and I think added. And rather than having people recreate the wheel, if we can show efficacy, then hopefully this will be picked up by other programs, mm-hmm. other schools. The next step we're taking is to offer this distance learning so that students can take it in Des Moines, and Tamara's going to teach it in Iowa City, and the university has fantastic technology, and they've been just wonderful to work with. So we're really trying to take this to the next step.
How unique is this course in the nation?
Well, there are a number of programs that individual programs, but there's no boy. That's a good question. I think I know about four or five other programs that attempt to address this. But now this is biased. So in our opinion, we think we're coming up with something that may be addressing things in a more comprehensive manner. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that's been incredible is just the top-down support that we've received from the University of Iowa, including Larry Lockwood, who's with the Office of Registrar, Dennis Mackey, who's chair of the Department of Rehabilitation Counselors, to the Iowa City VA, from our director, Mr. Barry Sharp, to the head of mental health services, Dr. Catherine Woodman, and my supervisor, Dr. Ann Sadler. So, and it really, I think this highlights an important aspect of the need for there to be collaboration between the VA, the universities, the community to come together to address these issues. One critical statistic is that there's a 5-year period of free care that all OAF veterans are eligible for, and that acronym stands for Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom. To date, the statistics are 47% have accessed VA care at least one time. 53% have not accessed care, and really we don't have much information about what's going on with those individuals. So this is a national public health issue, and it's one that's going to bleed into across the campuses and into other work environments as well.
Okay, Marcus is joining us from East Moline. Marcus, are you a veteran?
Yes, I am.
Sir, happy Veterans Day to you. What do you have to share with us?
Well, I was just listening to commentary you had on the radio, and I was agreeing with the person you had on there about veterans going back to school. I was over in Iraq for a little over a year, and me and my wife are both veterans. And I had my associate's degree before I went overseas, and I came back and I went through a lot of the VA programs that you're speaking about. And like I spoke to one of your colleagues earlier, it's not the same at all.
Mm.
They have you take medications that they try you out on, see if it'll work and help you out, and it's pretty hard.
Mm-hmm. So specifically in the classroom, were you feeling the stigma that we talked about earlier, that there were other students younger than you looking at you with some questions that made you uncomfortable?
Well, and that's another thing too. I'm 37 years old, and you know, when you sit in that class, of course, with the younger students, you do feel that way. It's kind of odd because you wonder if they're thinking, how come you didn't get an education earlier?
Mm-hmm.
But the military part, yeah, it's some people, like the gentleman spoke about earlier, some people kind of know if you're military or not. Some of the instructors right off the bat, they can tell if you've been in the military. And, of course, I, along with many other soldiers, I had PTSD myself. I'm a disabled veteran.
Mm-hmm. And how did that PTSD exhibit itself in the classroom for you?
It's a concentration problem, and I thought maybe it was the drugs that I was taking to help with the PTSD, but you have a hard time concentrating on pretty much anything.
Mm.
So you're trying to grasp something that's minute and it's fairly simple, and trying to wrap your mind around it, and your mind just wanders everywhere else.
Marcus, thank you. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
And I noticed the big difference from when I went to school before I went to war and trying to go to school after I came back.
Mm-hmm. The perspective is just different.
It's very different. So I totally understand when a veteran is like, I'm having problems in school. I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. I have problems myself.
Do you have any suggestions about what can make life easier for a veteran in a classroom?
Well, I think joint effort with the VA. The VA totally understands us in the schools that we do go to. I think that they need to sit down and talk amongst each other so they realize, you know, what we've gone through, what we've seen. Because people here in the, you know, other students, they'll have no affiliation with the military. We, as soldiers, see things that they will never see.
Yep.
And we experience things that some of these people will never see. So, and that's what the point we're trying to get across is we're humans too.
Right. Marcos, yes. Thank you for your story, your service, and your call today.
Thank you.
Let's go to our hour is rapidly coming to an end. A lot of callers to get to. Let's get to Kate in Iowa City. Good afternoon, Kate.
Are you, good afternoon.
You a veteran calling in?
Yes, I am.
Well, happy Veterans Day to you.
Thank you very much. I wanted to address, wanted to hear Dr. Hall address an issue that I've recently been researching regarding females and their reactions to PTSD incidents. And I was also wondering if, I haven't listened to your full hour, but I was wondering if you couldn't address some of the issues that are facing female veterans versus male veterans. For instance, as a female veteran, I know that I am often not considered as a veteran. I'm always thought to be, oh, you must have been married to a veteran. You know, you couldn't possibly be a veteran yourself. And with our present situations that the United States military is involved in because of the blurring of lines and guerrilla warfare that's being used in both of those situations, there isn't a direct line between combat and non-combat service.
Okay, Kate, we'll try to get to those very quickly. Our hour's coming to an end, but thank you for your service and your call, Kate in Iowa City.
Well, I think those are wonderful points. First of all, we have a changing military in that women are serving in far greater roles and often combat roles as well. Also, the nature of the conflicts that we have right now, there's not the rear lines that may have been in prior wars, so that people are operating what they call forward operating bases, maybe shelled, maybe mortared. So women are experiencing combat and then traumas. Now, you add into that something that is disturbing is the rate of what we call military sexual trauma, so rape by service members. Current estimates are around 26% of women who are returning have had some sort of sexual assault. So women face some particular barriers. One of the things at our VA is that we do have a women's clinic, and hopefully we're addressing those issues in a very sensitive and appropriate manner.
What about the way that women react to PTSD compared to men?
Well, I think that the reactions, I think they're very similar reactions as far as how they express themselves. But if you think about the military sexual trauma component, coming into a VA where there's mostly men, there's mostly male providers, that may discourage people from seeking care. So that's hence why there's a real initiative to develop women's health programs and to really honor what women are doing and the expanded roles they have.
Okay. We'll come. Yes.
And I did just want to mention that you know, within the VA here at Iowa City, we do have the fortune of being able to do what we consider what we call cognitive rehabilitation to address some of the cognitive problems that the previous caller talked about, and then also to do some scholastic assessments to come up with accommodations for things like PTSD, traumatic brain injury, so that we can get those people the help that they need. And schools have been fantastic in working with us on that.
Unfortunately, our hour is almost at a close. Dr. Michael Hall of the Iowa City Veterans Administration Medical Center. And I want to go to Patrick Murphy because he has been on the phone from Boone, Army veteran, a 20-year veteran of the military, president of Iowa State University's Student Veteran Association. Patrick, any final thoughts to leave us with as you've heard these powerful testimonials that we've had over the course of the hour from callers?
The one final point I want to make is a lot of the press and publicity has been for veterans that are suffering from PTSD and TBI, and that's well and good. We definitely need that. But the majority of the veterans coming back are not suffering from those. So you got to remember that not all veterans that are coming back are going to have PTSD problems or the reactions that they got. So you may be talking to a guy on the street perfectly normal. He could be a vet, and you won't be able to tell.
Right.
But you got to remember that just because they're a vet does not, you can't automatically assume that they're going to have the problems of the PTSD and the flashbacks and the symptoms that can manifest from that. So we want to try to avoid the stigma of automatically connecting veteran status to sufferers of PTSD.
Patrick Murphy, thank you so much for joining us. Army veteran and president of the Iowa State University Student Veteran Association, Michael Hall, Tamara Woods. Do you want to leave us with any contact information? How can people find out more?
Certainly, Tamara.
Yeah, if you're interested in the class, email me at tamara-woods@uiowa.edu, tamara-woods@uiowa.edu.
Dr. Hall, Tamara, thank you for joining us this hour. It's been enlightening.
And thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Happy rest of this Veterans Day. Thanks for joining us.